This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, I'm here with Ian Edwards from the UK Vintners Association and winemaker yourself from England, Firley Estates. How are you, Ian?
I'm fine.
What's your role at the UK Vintners Association?
I'm on the council. I'm chairman of the Wessex region, and I'm treasurer to the UKVA. I've also been on the subcommittee, which has been working with DEFRA on the new EU wine reforms.
Excellent. We're going to be talking about that in a minute. But do you want to just briefly tell me what the UK Vintners Association is?
It's a trade body for people in the industry. And it deals with basically all aspects of the industry, apart from marketing, which is run by the English Wine Producers, which is a separate organisation. But it works very closely with the English Wine Producers.
Okay, so you're more of the trade body, so you're more a producer face? And
yes, we deal with legislation, education, sort of helping new people come into the industry.
And how long's the UKVA been going for?
Oh, I don't know, 10 or 15 years.
10 or 15 years. Yeah. So a reasonable length of time.
Yeah.
I must admit, I thought you'd been going for ages and ages.
It used to be called, it had a different name previously. There was a previous organisation which took on both the roles of EWP and the UKVA, but that disbanded about 10 or 15 years ago and it split into two
parts.
Yeah.
Okay, excellent. So how many people are in the UKVA? Is it a compulsory scheme or is it?
No, it's not compulsory. It's people who come into the industry can decide whether they wish to contribute, join, and enjoy the benefits or not. And probably most people who are growing vines in the UK are members of the UKVA, but not all.
Not all of them. Okay, and what sort of fees do you have to pay to them?
The basic fee is just under £50, and then there's a hectareage levy, so the bigger your fees, it's about £60 a hectare, up to 7 hectares. So the biggest vineyards pay close to £500, the small vineyards only pay about £50.
Okay, but for that you get sort of access or at least an opportunity to argue the UK's...
The UK VA Council, all the members work without pay. There's only one paid employee, one part-time employee in the whole of the UKVA. So they get, there's a trade magazine, there's a database, discussion database, they get information on spraying, and there's a regular bulletin that goes out fortnightly, keeping them up to date on what's happening.
Oh, I have to try and get on that list to get that. Do I have to be a member to get the news?
Or? In theory, yes. Oh.
So that'd be 50 quid a year because I don't have any hectareage.
Yeah, that's right. There are quite a few members who just pay the £50.
What we're going to talk about a wee bit is some of the new legislation that's coming into the UK, or at least it's been debated about how to implement in the UK. Let's take one step back, though. A lot of the legislation you're dealing with has been driven by Europe, is that right?
Yes, that's right.
And how does the UKVA interface with the European Parliament?
Through DEFRA, which is a government organisation. European legislation set through Brussels, and the rules are set down at a European level, and then each member state has to then implement the rules through legislation in its own country.
Yeah.
And DEFRA has that responsibility for implementing that legislation and then also regulating it.
Okay, and the UKVA deals with DEFRA. It's sort of like a lobbyist representing the industry.
Yeah, we work together essentially too.
Okay, I imagine there wouldn't be. Is there many other people who have a position that try and work with DEFRA on this? Because lobbyists normally, there's normally two or three different points of view trying to drive it, or is it?
It will be. Certainly on some aspects there are. Obviously in the UK, the UKVA only produces a very small percentage of the alcohol drunk in the UK, very tiny. And so there are other bodies who are interested in the retail aspect of selling alcohol.
Who are also
lobbying or involved, but on sort of slightly different aspects of the legislation from where we are.
Okay, I suppose they're not really worried about yields, et cetera.
That's right. When it gets down to the nitty gritty of the winemaking, then it tends to be just the UKVA. The others aren't that interesting.
It's quite good then, isn't it? It's easy for you to come up with an agreement.
Yeah.
Europe's got a lot of new proposals, or the new person in charge of viticulture for the European Ministry. They've had some quite ranging ideas that came out about a year ago in terms of cutting back yields quite significantly and giving subsidies, and also planting bans as well. And those have worked their way through the system. They haven't been voted on at the European level, or have they?
Yeah, they have. They became law last April. April last year. Yes, the way European legislation works, the Commission, you get the Council regulations, which are sort of high level, mm-hmm. And the characters you see on the or hear about and read about in the papers and they see on the press, so they get involved at that level. And there's a piece of legislation was put in place last year, which gives the framework for the new laws, the new regime. But it describes the framework at a fairly high level. And that was what talked about planting bans. It talked about cutting back on funding and supplements, grants. And it talked about restricting chaptalization and sweetening wines.
Yeah.
So that overall framework was set. Once that's been set, the public figures sort of tend to drop away, and the implementing legislation is done by the Commission, who are civil servants, essentially.
Yep. Yep.
And we have been talking to Luke, who's been the senior civil servant, who's been responsible for getting the implementing legislation in place.
Okay, and so the legislation's been agreed and voted on?
It has been agreed. It has not been voted on. The way the process works, there's a lot of lobbying goes on, various drafts are produced. There are numerous meetings occurring every few weeks where the different member states put their points of view and try and get amendments to the drafts. There's then a final series of meetings where for each country to try and get a small change introduced. And once that point is agreed, the legislation is then translated into all the different languages and printed and sent out for voting. Mm-hmm. But as part of that final process, I think it's also agreed what type of vote, the form of the vote on the day it will take. My understanding is that for this legislation, the intention is that there will not be a vote. It will go through on the nod.
So what does that mean, the nod?
They seem to have agreed that it will not go to the vote, that it will just pass through.
So you can pass legislation in Europe without voting on it?
If you agree in advance that that's what you're going to do. So if there's no strong opposition to the legislation.
Okay.
You don't actually physically vote. It just goes through.
So once that legislation has been nodded, quite a nice bit of democracy in Europe, isn't it? You know?
Yeah.
What are the key parts of the legislation? Because I saw a lot of early stuff and I haven't seen the more recent.
Yeah. Well, the early stuff was probably seen about was things about planting bans and varietal restrictions and that sort of thing. We did very well. The UK did very well out of that. I think partly because we're so small, they didn't want. They basically gave us everything that we asked for. So we're not subject to a planting ban and never will be. We are allowed to, we have no restrictions on the varieties we can plant here. We can plant anything we like. And that will be the case until we become quite a lot bigger.
Because we were getting close to it in terms of volume of production.
The old limit we were.
What are the old limits and what are the new limits?
There is a new limit, but it doesn't apply to the UK.
Well, you've done quite well.
That's right. The way the legislation is drafted, a planting ban will not apply to the UK. Full stop.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. Okay, that's quite nice, isn't it? Okay, what other parts are there? So the planting ban, there was talk about chaptalization, big thing, adding sugar to the UK wine, especially after the last couple of vintages.
Yeah.
I'd hate to see what the wines would be like without chaptalization. The idea there was to stop people adding sugar, so producing less wine, really, wasn't it? By adding sugar, you can have higher yields and therefore you can produce more wine and you just add a bit of sugar to get the alcohol up. But by removing chaptalization, the idea is maybe just put a squeeze on some of the production.
That's right. And there has been, for the UK, there's been a small reduction in the amount of chaptalization we're allowed to do.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not really material because there's a secondary, there are two limits. There's one about the maximum amount of sugar you can add, and that has been reduced. But there's another restriction, which applies to most wines, which once you actually chaptalize, there is an absolute limit on the alcohol level you can produce.
Mm-hmm.
And that has stayed the same.
So what you're saying is there's like you can only add 100 grams of sugar to a bottle of wine, but you must keep it below 11%.
That's right. So as the grapes
or
as the grapes ripen more, the amount of sugar you can add is reduced.
Yeah.
Because you can't go for this
alcohol level. Yeah. And what are those limits?
For white wines, it's 11.5%, and for red and rosé, it's 12%.
Okay. And what's the sugar limit? Do you know what amount of sugar you're allowed to add is?
The equivalent of 3% of alcohol.
Oh, okay. All right. So, yeah, it's measured in alcohol, is it? So if you've got grapes coming in at below 8.5%?
Yeah, you could add 3% and make it a little
more. All right,
yeah.
And then above 8.5%, yeah. Only up to 11%.
Right. That's right. So although there was the reduction of 0.5%, it's not really significant to us because very few people putting in the maximum.
So chaptalization, not really a big one for us. Planting ban, not really a big one for us here as well, which is pretty good.
Yeah.
What other things were coming through? Rosé?
That's come through later. We were very, very pleased with the overriding legislation. We basically had a shopping list, and we got just about everything on our list. The only thing we had to concede on was the chaptalization, and we got everything else. On the implementation legislation, which is the one that's actually going through now, going through the commission, everything looked fine from our perspective until around Christmas, when there was some new paragraphs introduced into the draft. Which affected this is largely about labeling, which affected the way you could describe your wines, and in particular how you used locations, geographical units to market your wines.
Mm-hmm.
And that had potentially quite a big impact on us in the UK.
How's that?
Essentially because in the UK, we're a very small industry, very tiny industry,
yep.
And we tend to play on selling to tourists and the like. So it's quite a common practice to name your wines with some association to a tourist site or a tourist label.
Stonehenge.
Yeah.
Glagger.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, that's right. And the whole basis of the new legislation, or one of the fundamental principles of the new legislation that's come in, is that the quality of wine is determined by the location of the grapes. It's essentially the French system being terroir system being imposed across everybody. When the legislation was first introduced, it was supposed to be opening up the market and making it fair for everyone. And we interpreted that as being, you know, you could create brands. But in fact, the way it's actually gone is the other way. The terroir rules are actually coming to force, and they're being imposed across everybody. And people outside Europe also are being quite heavily affected.
How does that affect? Like, I know Europe's been driving things like geographical indicators into other countries like Australia. You know, they're doing a massive job there in terms of sorting out their GIs.
Yeah.
As far as I'm aware, the UK doesn't really have any geographical indicators.
No, that's right. That's a problem. That's a problem for us.
And you talk to winemakers and they say, look, we just don't know what they are. It's too early.
Yeah, that's right. That's the problem. It's all right for France and Italy. They've made wine for many, many years, and they've established these areas, and they have all the infrastructure in place to support them. But here in the UK, that's not the case. It's very early days. Our vineyards are scattered over quite large areas. We don't really know the characters of the different regions. And it's actually quite difficult for us to fall into their system.
So what will that mean? Will you have to create some GIs? Or?
We effectively do have some, for still wines, we do have some GIs, because we have a quality scheme.
Yep.
And they are effectively the counties. Well, each individual county is a GI, is the way it's
defined. Essex GI.
And the country, so England and Wales are also areas, which are already recognised in statute. And so we're basically having to latch on to those areas to fit in with the new system.
Yeah, because that's not really sensible, is it, by splitting it out by county, because you've got different soils and climates that don't really follow county boundaries. You know, county boundaries are more governed by fiefdoms, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
500,000 years ago.
That's right.
So we're going to land up with wines that are disconnected from the climate and the region they're grown, because to fit into that sort of...
That's right, but it's just too early for us to actually start defining those areas.
Is there an opportunity later on?
There is an opportunity later on to do that, although the process for actually defining one of these areas will become much more complicated after the 1st of August. There is an opportunity at the moment to do something before the 1st of August.
Which, and what's going on there?
And, well, the big problem for us in the UK was actually on the sparkling wines, because... in the sparkling wines, although we've been hugely successful, don't have a quality scheme as defined by the legislation, which has to be in statute.
Mm-hmm.
So there are no regions. For sparkling wine, there are no regions. We have no regions defined. Under the new regime, all our sparkling wines would be treated as though they were like the table wine equivalent.
Yep.
Yeah, because there's no quality scheme in place. Even though, quite clearly, the quality of what's produced is much better than that.
Yeah, for sure.
So one of the things we're having to do between now and the 1st of August is introduce a quality scheme.
And what's that going to be based around?
It's still very much under discussion, but we will probably have to base it on counties again. Because we just don't have anything else.
How will that affect
people like English wine producers who get grapes from all over the place? They don't just grow it in Essex. They grow
they grow it all over the place. Well, the rules polarize businesses and the way you name your business and the way you name your wines. So if you want to name your business after a location, a geographical unit, then you essentially are restricted in getting your grapes from that unit, from that location.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to be able to expand and buying grapes from elsewhere in the UK, then you've got to name your business with some made-up brand name that doesn't relate to a location.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
And it's basically a fundamental business decision about which path you go down right at the start, because if you start with don't go down the first path, it may be quite difficult for you to switch to the second path.
Oh, really?
Unless you actually change.
You can't have multiple brands. One brand.
Oh, you could. Obviously, you could do that. But if you started
by calling yourself Sussex Vineyard, Sussex White Horse Vineyard, or something like that, you'd be in trouble.
Then you'd be restricted to buying grapes from Sussex.
Yeah.
If you were hugely successful and started expanding, everyone knew your name. But you would have to only be able to get your grapes from Sussex. And if you wanted to start buying in from outside, you'd have to change your name.
Okay, I'm with you.
I don't see a lot of, I see the English quality standard, the what is it called?
For still wines, there's a standard. It's there's quality wine. There's quality wine PSR, I think is how it's PSR, phrased at the moment. It'll be shortened to quality wine going after the 1st of August.
But I don't see a lot of...
And there's regional wine, which is a level lower than that.
I don't see a lot of names, though, like Essex or Kent on any of the labels or any of the descriptors. Am I just missing something, or is it?
Under the current rules, there's two levels. There's the quality scheme, which is the top level, and there's the regional wine scheme, which is a middle level, and then there's table wine, which is the bottom. Yep. If you're doing table wine, you're not allowed to put where it's come from, essentially. You can put where it's bottled, but you can't put where the grapes have come from. If there's a quality wine, you have to put quality wine PSR, and you actually can't allow to put any other location on. And it's only for the regional wines that you can put the counties on. So you will see people putting, we put Dorset regional wine, when you'll see Sussex regional wine, Kent regional wine, or sometimes people just put English regional wine. It's really only in that middle band that you can use the county name at the moment.
Oh, okay.
But that will change slightly, because we'll still have the two tiers, but you'll be able to put the name of the location, whichever tier you're in.
What other, we talked about the rosé, we touched on that was quite topical at the moment.
The rosé, that was the biggest issue on the labelling side. On the winemaking side, there's a separate implementation legislation, and they're basically trying to open up the winemaking practices so that more practices are acceptable. And the other thing they've done is they've made the process for changing the rules easier.
Mm-hmm.
Before it had to go all the way up to the EU council to be able to change the rules. It's now being changed at commission level, which is slightly easier to do. But they're trying to follow essentially OIV practices. Anything that's an acceptable OIV practice will be accepted in Europe, is the intention.
What's OIV?
It's the international body.
All right. So what about things like spinning cone and some of the de-alkalized?
Yeah, that's the sort of thing they're interested. They're going to start to allow.
Are they going to allow that?
Okay. Those practices.
Because it's crazy at the moment. You're allowed to bring the wines in. You have to make them in the States to bring them in.
Yeah, that's right. And that's all being opened up. I'm trying to create a level playing field there. Yeah. And it's in that area that this rosé issue has arisen, because in other parts of the world, you can make rosé by blending red and white wines, which in Europe, currently that's banned.
Except for in Champagne.
Yeah, that's right. Champagne, you can do it, but for still wines, you can't do it. But under the new rules, you can. The French have kicked up a fuss.
Saying
they've made an amendment to the labelling regulation so it's clear. So you've got traditional rosé, which is made the normal French way, or you've got blended rosé, which is a blend of red and white wines.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how it stands at the moment. And although the French are still making a noise, I don't know how successful they're going to be. I think my understanding of what the position is now, it's going to be quite difficult for them to make a change now.
Okay. All right. Oh, well, we'll look out for that legislation. It's in August, isn't it?
Yes.
All right. I'll keep an eye out for seeing that getting voted through.
All right. I think we'll leave it there, Ian. Thank you very much for your time.
All right. Thanks, Chris.
Cheers, mate.